Welcome back to Channel 9 Live. We are continuing on with a security interview. We have security experts here, so can you introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah? My name is Paula, and hopefully I'm a security expert, as you said, because what I do.
Well, what you do. Thanks. You had both of you had a pre-con here at Tech Ed Europe.
Yes, that's true.
People paid to see you to learn about security.
I'm kind of shy, you know. But what I do for a living is penetration tests. I work for a company that is called Secure. And security technically is my passion. And just before I came to see you, I was doing my job as usual. So it's an everyday thing.
Just breaking into stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's a little bit like that.
A little something like that?
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, my name is Azain Shikarti. I work with TrueSec. So I've been a developer once upon a time, and then from there kind of migrated into the IT admin side and the network admin, and then security was a big thing that I liked, so I just continued with that one. So
I've
done everything from pen testing, all kind of security assessments, and helping customers build up security as well or fix it where it's broke.
Yeah.
Thursday.
Yeah. Well, hey, I've got a long history in IT, so at least we can share that in common.
Have you seen the Pulp Fiction movie?
The Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know the Wolf?
Oh, the Wolf.
Yes.
That's the name. Is that what you call him?
Huh? Yeah. Okay. That's the nickname. Well, it is.
That's the nickname.
That's even on the badge.
Of course.
Yeah, that's official right there. Okay. Well, yeah. If you have questions, please just. Put those in online, and we'll submit those. But for now, I would love to talk to you about learn really what is some of the things that you most commonly see as far as risks from companies. I know that's a super broad question, but what are kind of the most persistent things you're seeing with those risks?
Yeah.
Security risks, yeah.
Yeah, so, there's a bunch of statistically repeating things whenever we are delivering the pen tests. And very often, it's a tiny mistakes that administrators make whenever they are configuring things. Very often, they are triggered by being in a hurry. So, for example, giving the technical examples like installing SQL Server on the two privileged accounts, logging on as administrators, particularly domain admins to the user workstations. And these mistakes, they sometimes come from, as I said, being in a hurry, or sometimes just because a lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And yesterday we were talking on a pre-con about the pasty hash attack. Mm-hmm. That is very much ongoing attack, and it was always there, and it's always working. Yeah. And in every pen test, it's a fantastic way. It's even boring. Like when you do a pen test and it's about the pasty hash, you're like, whatever, yes? And that works. And that comes, of course, from the situation whenever you log into the certain operating system, you leave the hash behind, and when someone steals the hash, this person is able to authenticate with the hash to the different kinds of computers. So as long as administrators, they do not, of course, realize that this is a problem, it's going to be all the time the problem, because still many companies, they did not upgrade to Windows 8.1, and so it's still a problem, of course. But Microsoft is solving it within the next versions, next releases of operating systems. But still, it requires updating from the company perspective. So there's a lot of things we could really talk about.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the another thing that is very, very much spoken about is the identity situation. How do you do with our identities? How can we deal with that securely or secure enough? I mean, consuming an application somebody else manages, somebody else is developing that one, and it's not on my prem. What should I think of? How could I do it? There is a vision about a single identity. We can manage that to access all our resources, both internally and externally. So that's a really big question among developers and among IT pros as well. Trying to consume those cloud-based services and other services in the most secure way possible. And the identity is a very big thing. I mean, passing the hash or identity credentials, theft and all that kind of thing is very important. It's even more important when we extend our systems to go outside.
So, both kind of themes, passwords, identity. So, I mean, that's the next one of the things that comes to my mind right along with that is multi-factor authentication, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Azure Active Directory now, you can, get a premium account, them a phone number or whatever. Patch the hasses now, whatever, right?
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Well, that works for those organizations, companies, or enterprises that feels it's fine that somebody else is taking care about the authentication process of our users. And you still have some enterprises, organizations that are not okay with that situation. I want to govern that. I want to control that 100%. So then you have to implement that kind of resources internally. So either using smart card logon, which is a very well implemented multi-factor authentication schema. Yep. We do have the virtual smart card set up available since a couple of versions earlier. So there are options available for those who want to implement that and control that themselves. Although the MFA in Azure is a very nice service per se, so it suits very many customers as well. Myself had recommended that a couple of customers just testing that, and they skip all other kind of multi-factor authentication and using that one.
Yeah, the problem with implementing that is that it's a bunch of components that you need to correlate and you need to sync them together. And when you even discuss it, it sounds like a very big and difficult project, yes? But what is the thing is that administrators need to think about what kind of systems they are using, what kind of identity types they are using. Mm-hmm. And eventually, Microsoft provides the ways to correlate them all and to manage a single point, as Hassan was mentioning. So effectively, it looks that it's kind of a difficult solution, but what is the benefit at the end? It's not to be really described. It's just great.
So when you say the single solution, you're talking about like the Azure Connect product that allows you to synchronize multiple identity sources into like Azure Active Directory? Is that
that's a very good option to store information about your identity. You still can perform the authentication process on your own systems. Mm-hmm. But they can store the user information, everything related to my role, my access to different applications maybe can be handled by the Azure Active Directory per se.
The thing about the system is that whenever you want to move your application somewhere to the cloud, you need to redesign it a little bit. Mm. And that's very often the blocker. And companies, they do not have the resources, funds, or whatever to do this within the certain amount of time. So it's like, oh, does it mean that we need to rewrite this application? And there is nobody really to come in and to explain that it's not that difficult process.
Yeah. So if you just have information about the built-in components, I mean, the .NET platform, since it's version 4.4.5, you have it all built in. It's just a couple of sections in your web config file, and then you have it already in the platform delivered for you.
In SharePoint, it's native, so you can easily implement it. But still, the guys need to know more about that.
Mm. Yeah, it seems obviously that lighting up MFA for a user account in Azure Active Directory is not really too hard, but that has implications too, right? Like, it doesn't. I mean, I think this is what a lot of people wrestle. I would imagine they wrestle with. It's like, are we going to require somebody to answer their phone or put their badge in every single time they want to log in place, right? Mm-hmm. So where do you see like that multi-factor authentication really being effective in being utilized versus just everybody blowing it off and just forget about it, kind of thing?
Well, it's more like if you're in a situation you're having non-trusted devices, that's where the importance of multi-factor authentication comes in. So as soon as we start speaking about managed trusted devices, then you can replace that with something else. You might start your process of managing or trusting a device with a multi-factor authentication. Then you give that device more of a persistent something, cookie, ticket, or something. So you can recognize that over time. As I said, it's more in situation, we don't have a clue about your device. Let us verify your connection a little bit extra.
Okay. Not a really long time ago, we delivered a security awareness campaign for one of the companies. And on every meeting that we were having with employees, there was a complaint. It wasn't planned. It was really funny because you were like delivering 10 meetings, yes? And everybody's saying the same thing. What about the passwords that we are using? Like, we have got so many passwords. So that's the major thing that people's going to like, because within every company, you've got many types of different kinds of applications, yes? And not to mention the banking environment. That's like even more than in a regular company. So the employee is going to be happy because they're going to use a single identity to get into all of the systems. But of course, that requires appropriate planning approach and so on.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what we easily see that looking at different breaches that have been out there, the Adobe and all other kind of breaches where password-related information has been leaked out, we see clearly that users are reusing their passwords. They are not able to cope with that. Oh, I'm having 10, 20, 30 different identities. How am I supposed to handle those passwords? Yeah. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to use my same password. I use it at the office as the one I use at the Adobe, mm-hmm. at the library, and so on. So that's the real problem. We need to make it more easy, more simple for our users to reuse their whatever they already have today.
Another every system allows you to provide the password complexity. I was in a very funny situation. There was like, I was displaying the slide for the employees training, and there was a password mentioned. It was like password 1, 2, or something like that. And there was a one person sitting, and he's like, oh, wow, how did you manage to get my password? I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, it's over there.
That's not good.
And everybody's like, okay.
You're like, this brings up a good point of internal security.
Something like that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I want to jump to that. But you mentioned there's ways to make this easier. I mean, on a personal level, I think about things like LastPass. You know, there's just... central way to help with that situation. Yeah. But for companies and organizations, obviously there's the Nirvana goal of everybody has one username and one password, mm-hmm. and that is mm-hmm. really secure, and maybe it even has some form of two-factor authentication.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah. that's, you know,
pretty much
that's all
it.
Hard
yes.
to come by. Mm-hmm. So what do you recommend to help try and remediate that situation?
That's a pretty good idea. I mean, what you mentioned, also there's also KeePass and a couple of other applications with that type that are available on the within the multi-platforms for different kinds of mobile phones. And coming back to the story, this is what I recommended to this person. It's like, why do you use such an easy password? Use something difficult, and you don't have to remember it, and just have it on your phone. I mean, it's still employee, and in our world, it's called just a user, yes?
yeah.
And this person was very happy because, of course, that completely removes the necessity of remembering pretty heavy to remember strings. Mm. So, I mean, this is a pretty good recommendation. And if the company is managing the mobile devices, publishing this kind of apps to different platforms, iPhones, Androids, Windows phones, whatever, and showing how this works to employees will easily adopt it because it's very easy to use app.
Yeah, there is a very strange situation where we've learned our users and IT users, IT pros, devs, you should have a complex password, 8 characters, like let's say that's small capital letters, some additional characters, and something like that. What we're actually doing, we're giving them something very, very strange and very difficult to remember.
Yeah.
The human being is not made for that. We're more adapted for sentences, passphrases. That would be much, much easier. But on the other hand, we have systems that are not able to use that long password as a password phrase. So we were kind of forced into this situation. So we made our users adopt something that is very easy for computers to guess and work with, and very hard for humans to remember.
Right.
Instead of giving them something that's much easier for a human and much harder, the longer the password is, the more efforts you need to put in there to get that password, to crack it or whatever. So if we can go back a little bit in time and just remodel the whole thing and say, hey, use passphrases instead. We still have to cope with those systems that were designed to just keep an 8-character long password. So sure, we need to take care about these and we need to change them accordingly. Now, federation is one way to cope with that. So the system don't need to bother about your password. It can use your identity. You can give it that information. So just one single identity, centralized identity, will give us that kind of benefits.
Yeah, and just to add to one thing to what Hassan mentioned, is that on the other hand, within the companies, there's usually nobody to introduce to the users how the password should be invented, yes? Because as you said, for the human being, the inventing the complex password and so on is like, so I need to put the number and the capital letter over there and so on. But on the other hand, why don't they think about, I had a tuna sandwich with a capital I for $10? And that makes a very good password.
Right.
But
so now I know your password. I know. Yeah.
And
the
price for the tuna sandwich.
Yeah. Wait. How did you know mine? No, that's right.
There is another situation with that. I mean, passphrases are good, but considering mobile devices, they're not good at all.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
we're back there. How could we make it easier
that's,
for the user?
That's painful to type. Yeah, I had a tuna sandwich for $10 on the phone.
Yeah, so we need to give them something more persistent on that device so yeah. they can come and go right. and they'd have access to the
point.
System. Well, that's where the trusted device model is something we need to look into.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Okay. So what are some maybe training practices there? Because of course we can all say, yeah, just attend this password training thing. But the, I mean, great suggestion as far as passphrases and things like that. But what's the practical nature of how do you enforce something?
Making things visual. Yeah. So for example, one of my like very easy but favorite demos for such a person. Is to show a couple of different kinds of portals that are available in Publink, and to use Fiddler, the web debugger, and do the HTTPS sniffing, because whenever you allow and trust the Fiddler certificate, then you are able to intercept the HTTPS traffic and be kind of like man in the middle. It's a very simple demo. Mm.
Yep.
And when people see that for different kinds of services, I mean, I will not mention the names, but or if you say we can, of course we can do that. But very popular, everybody knows them. If you do the sniffing like that, the password is in the clear text in the tunnel, and they're like, oh, yes, and it's like, okay. So if this password is similar to the one that you are using for the enterprise, well, you know that for a couple of companies the password leaked. So what is the chance that the vicious person is gonna access the corporate data? And then people start thinking about that. Yes, and we always hear that, oh, I didn't know that it was so easy. Mm. And even after the pre-con, we had comments like that, like, wow, this was so shocking. I didn't know it was so easy.
Yeah.
Well, it is easy under certain circumstances and within the certain conditions, of course. Mm. But if someone's going to be the target of the hacker, I mean, what's the problem? And if it's a user, then the level of like security awareness is a little bit lower than for the security experts, right?
So I'd say the security awareness situation is the most important for our users. We cannot show them every detail. That's impossible. They won't be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Simply, it's impossible. I mean, for the tech guys, for the devs, that may be possible, but not for the regular users. So we need to create something that makes sense, makes it easier.
Such as? Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking of credentials that are impossible to steal.
Yeah.
Kind of something built into our devices, maybe. We're getting there. There are standards being developed right now. So your web browser, your application will be very, very picky about those situations like, oh, you're never going to get any secure warning, certificate spoofed or something like that. The application will stop immediately. You will not be able to go beyond that point. We need to get our user or systems there. And that's the only way we can help our users just cope with that type kind of situations. Today, we're giving them the option to accept the risk. And we're doing that for a user who is not capable of judging what type of risk it is.
What's on the short list in that training? I mean, we've talked a ton about password and multi-factor authentication. Mm. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of other there's a lot of other areas here for education on internal security that we could help out with. What's that list look like in your mind?
The inventing the passwords, if you do not have the integrated identity implemented, that's the first thing. Actually, one more example came to my head regarding
this. Okay, let's hear it. All right.
And when I was speaking about the password techniques, how we are able to figure out the good password, of course, one of the typical methods, and I'm sure you can all agree, is that whenever there is like whatever, right now we've got October. Yeah, so we've got, like, user has a password, secure password, and because it's October, at the end, it adds 10, because it's October. When it's going to be November, they're going to add 11, yes? And password is complex enough. It's changed every 30 days. Everything is perfect. So when I was mentioning that, and what we are not supposed to do, so we are not supposed to add, at the end, of course, the month number, everybody was like, because a lot of people are doing
that. So it's good having a schema how your password is looking like in different services, but if it is guessable, okay, if I get one of your passwords, I might be able to guess the rest of them and for all, I mean, future.
So another fun password example. What else is there? So let's take a step back and let's say, you know, a lot of people focus, I'm sure, on the with cloud and with other things on the locking down the firewall ports and the, you know, encrypting the data and the other stuff. I mean, is that would you say more important? Or, I mean, it's important, but would you say that's more important versus internal security type threats, such as passwords, but it could be other things. Advanced persistent threats of other natures that are there.
What we can learn, I mean, the lessons we've learned so far from different attacks, different breaches, is that almost all the time it goes through a user. Mm-hmm. There is a user with access to that information, and the attacker will use that user's access to get to that point. So if I can trick you, click a link, or run something, or you trust my USB stick or something like that, then mission is accomplished. If I can get a foothold on your device, I don't need to be an admin. I just need to be you on that device.
Right.
So from there, I can start looking around and then investigating what else could I get access to.
Okay.
I mean, the RSA attack, all other kind of attacks are user-oriented. Started with the user, and going from there to that system, that keeps the information I would like to get to.
And we're coming back to the same subject, which is people.
That's right.
Yes, because whenever we've got a very good technology, configured firewall, whatever, at the end we've got also physical security, and we've got people that are clicking on the voice message that they receive on the Dropbox, which is the case of the CryptoLocker and a couple of other things. So this is how we are getting into the infrastructure right now. That's why people need to be educated. But it's nothing new, isn't it?
Yeah. So you mentioned one thing, Hussein, about somebody, you know, clicking on a link and gaining user access. Other than passwords, because we've covered that a lot, what are ways that you can help prevent that kind of attack or attacks like that?
Well, the only thing is awareness, more and more awareness. Tell them what's never trust on a link, never click anywhere, unless you certainly know that this is something I can trust. We need to somehow give them the tool to figure out whether this is trustworthy or not.
But isn't there a way to eliminate? Because I mean, if you leave the trust back on the user, right? Then that's
well, it's very difficult. It's very hard. That's maybe the hardest thing we can imagine, right of now. So you need to tell them clearly: we're never going to send out any links and any emails we ask you to clicking on. We're never going to send an email saying, "Hey, you need to reset your password." We're going to call you maybe or something like that, get in touch with some other means, but never ever going to put that in an email, or there will never be a link on any web page. It's either this or nothing.
Okay. What about things that come to my mind is anti-malware type things within your organization, the places that it come in, web and email are two things that come to mind.
Yeah.
You didn't mention those at all. Is that useful or not? I mean,
well, it's a good filter. It's a very useful component. Uh-huh. It still, though, it doesn't know anything about the unknown.
Right.
That's the typical, I mean, the malware itself or the anti-malware itself is put together that way. I know that's a badge, then I know how to realize that that's a badge. If I have another shape or another content for something never seen before, I don't have any ability to discover that. Yeah. Of course, we do have behavior analysis, but that's something that costs performance and costs time, and we would not go that far, so we are affecting the user experience. That's a very important piece to remember when it comes to anti-malware. Okay. So we're still vulnerable in that perspective.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
We've got technologies like AppLocker and so on.
So I'm sorry we're gonna keep going with you. I know Hussein, you've got to run to a session here.
We have a session right now about web hacking and web security. Yeah.
Okay.
So it will be on the channel line, of course. So
I want to make sure you have time. Mm-hmm. I would like to actually continue on a little bit longer with you, but we're gonna wrap now for a minute, and just stay tuned, and we'll be back in just a second. Continuing on with just Paula for a little bit before we go to the Pink Show. So keep watching. All right, we are continuing on the security space here talking with Paula. And definitely ask your questions. We are waiting because, you know, we want to hear from you and what you want to know. I know that you are a pen tester, and I would love to maybe learn more from you in that space. The thing that comes to mind also is cloud security. So obviously there's a lot of different ways that you can deploy things into to cloud services. Mm-hmm. Where have you, you know, maybe done some pen testing against people running things in the cloud? Where you've had some lessons learned that you could share?
We actually did. We are specializing right now within the Azure penetration testing. So, well, Azure, more like web applications running within the Azure.
Yeah.
And there's more and more customers that are actually moving applications to the cloud, but they are afraid if the application is, of course, good enough, well-written, so that basically this application will be not exploited. And our job is to find out all of the logic coding related problems within this application. And still, I mean, developers, they are also specializing in writing applications. So it's always like this kind of cat and mouse game that if they are like fantastic, then probably we will not be able to find anything. But people make mistakes.
Right.
And within every application, of course, that was written, we found something. And then it's good to make such tests because then the customers was able to fix the problem. And then currently right now, that you have a secure application running within the Azure.
So where do you find a lot of those problems? Is it in surface level outside kind of issues, like where they need to lock down some ports, or is it like issues with the code in the app itself, or what do you find?
Usually an issue with the code.
Usually an issue with the code.
For example, such applications can be also vulnerable to cross-site scripting and a couple of other things. Most of the typical web-related attacks apply to Azure as well. Because, of course, application is designed and written in a different way, but still, I mean, we are using the same type of technologies. So whenever a developer is making problem here, it's going to make the same problem over there.
Okay.
So vast majority of the attacks that are to be done to the regular websites, they're also applicable to Azure. We could sum it up like that.
So it's kind of like, you know, you move to the cloud service, it's not the fact that they moved to the cloud service, it's just their coding often that it has flaws. Have you found instances where, I know you do a lot of pen testing probably for internal as well as cloud services, do you find that maybe there's certain things even that the cloud service, people using those cloud services have not really there that you do find with people running their own infrastructure?
Not really. It's
about the same?
It's about the same, exactly.
Okay.
So as I said, I mean, if there's a developer that writes a website and the customer hires someone to create a website for them, maybe it's like the first, second, third, fourth application that this developer is writing because everybody is learning, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is in this industry and everybody needs to learn how to do the either pen test, either write an application. So this developer usually makes the same mistake. But still, that's why we are doing the pen test to completely remove this kind of chances for the attack.
Yeah. So are there some good plugins from the development perspective that help with maybe some of those common security things? You mentioned cross-site scripting. Are there other common just knock those off the list or work in a different way, maybe automated testing to really help out?
There are some. There's a lot of materials that developers can basically educate themselves with. Start from seeing the sessions at TechEd. I know a couple of guys that are actually developers, like Vittorio Bertotti, and he is talking about identity management and writing the applications that are supporting that. So education is the first thing, and then when developer understands all of the things, then they can reach the appropriate tools and start coding the secure application. So it's about like this.
Yeah. Are there? Do you see like, let's say maybe an operations type folks was working together with infrastructure configuration as code for that application, and defining permissions on all kinds of things. Do you find that helps, or is that useful in
that,
this kind of situation?
That helps a little bit. Mm-hmm. But for example, today, we just finished another pen test for Azure. And there was a problem with managing user session within the application.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular user, for example, that wasn't intended, was able to create another user account and so on. So this was, without any doubts, the problem related to how application was designed. But then again, if you test it properly, then such problems can be excluded.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking also about, if you have, and this is putting on my DevOps hat, if you have a, let's say, a release pipeline that's, you're releasing features every day, every week, pushing things out in a very fast manner, right, in a more ideal world, how is maybe security and pen tested impacted by that kind of behavior.
Well, that's why we've got a CISO role within the companies, yes? Chief Information Security Officer, so that he's going to step in such a process and he's going to say, wait a moment, this code that you're going to just put to public online, it needs to be reviewed first from the security perspective. Okay. Of course, it slows down the business. That's why there is always this kind of struggle, what to pick if we don't have time. But doing the patching, as you mentioned, like every week and doing this very often, it must be a well-planned process. Because, I mean, being in a hurry never helps. So if they do have the situation that the customer has a situation that they need to patch the application or just update it in a certain way every week, they need to put inside the process security as well. Whatever happens, they need to squeeze it in, organize it appropriately, because otherwise this application is going to end up like there was this kind of picture with what developer wanted, what manager wanted, what selling person sold, what actually customer wanted, and so on. Yeah. And these were completely different things. So at the end, this application is going to be trashy, and trashy means lack of security very often.
Yeah. Well, I think there's certain ways I'd imagine of doing things too, that if you have security integrated in earlier on in that overall life cycle, then, you know, they can possibly not become a blocker, right? I mean, are you seeing that happen perhaps where maybe the security doesn't say, hey, I need, CSIO says, hey, I need 2 weeks of delay. That only lasts so long for some companies who are trying to move faster, right? Like, so what are ways maybe practically that the security can help but not become a bottleneck in the overall process?
Well, that's how it usually is. And security is always put aside whenever, as we mentioned before, we are in a hurry. Yeah? So CISO needs to be a reasonable person, of course.
Right.
And whenever he knows that there is such a process going on, he needs to have the resources ready to be able to address the needs properly. So it's more like an organizational thing, nothing more than that. Yes, appropriate resources, people with knowledge, assisting him and being very much engaged into the process. Also, people that are delivering the project, the same story, they need to think security-wise and they need to contact the CISO to of course, deliver that kind of advice. So it must be well organized. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, probably bringing the security expertise into the teams that develop the features and the products and
that's
having that on early makes sense for sure.
Totally agree.
Okay,
totally
cool.
Agree.
Okay, well, I know we have Ping coming up here, so I want to make sure we give them some time, but thank you so much, Paula, for hanging out
thank
and answering questions.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate
it. So stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with an episode of Ping.